If you're anything like me, you're always hunting for stories that make your skin crawl, in the best way. That's why I have to tell you about Grimly. Every week, they dig into the unholy, the unsolved, and the deeply unsettling. From chilling true crime to eerie tales that blur the line between fact and folklore. The production is hauntingly good, the storytelling absolutely captivating. It's the kind of podcast that stays with you long after you finish listening. So if you're ready to explore the darker side of history and humanity, subscribe to Grimly wherever you get your podcasts. Just don't say I didn't warn you.
My kind of town, Chicago is. No, it's not, actually. I don't even really like Chicago. No offense to my Chicago listeners. And actually, you know what? It's not even really Chicago that I dislike, because I do like the downtown area of Chicago quite a bit. It's the fucking airport. I swear to you, nothing ever flies on time out of Chicago airport. If you want to get anywhere, just, you know, don't, because Chicago is not going to get you there. No joke, whenever I fly, I do not go through Chicago at all. It's the worst airport in the history of ever. I'm sorry, it's just true. Please don't hate me. With that being said, we're going to Chicago today. So, the Windy City. And we are going to talk about an elevator. And this is a creepy-ass fucking elevator, by the way, that killed people, multiple people. And then, even after those deaths, it kept doing things. Things that made one of America's most prestigious department stores at the time, a place that prided itself on luxury and customer service, permanently seal it off of a perfectly functioning elevator because their own employees were terrified of it. Do you know the department store I'm talking about? This is going to bring you back today, you guys. This is the story of Marshall Field's death elevator that I am going to be telling to you like right now. And this one is real. It is documented. And this actually happened. It is so gnarly. So go grab your favorite bevy. Let's cut to the chase and get into this shit. Here we go. Okay. So before we get into this horrific shit show, let me set the scene, because honestly, context really matters here. Marshall Field's wasn't just any department store. This place was a fucking institution, okay? We're talking about a store that opened in 1852, became the place to shop in Chicago. And if you were anybody of anybody, you shopped at Marshall Field's. It was like the Harrods of the United States, if you know what Harrods is over in London, which, by the way, is the most beautiful department store I've ever been in. But if you wanted to be anybody, you shopped at Marshall Field's. End of sentence. The flagship store was on State Street and was, and still is, though now it's Macy's, which honestly breaks my heart a little bit. This massive, gorgeous building, 13 stories of retail glory. It takes up an entire city block. The architecture is absolutely stunning. There's a Tiffany's dome inside that's worth like $1 million, and that is not an exaggeration. This is literally a place where you went to see and be seen. Know what I'm saying? And it also makes me think, if you are nostalgic like I am at all for the 80s, oh my gosh, do you remember the movie The Mannequin? Like, I seriously watched it way too much as a kid. I really did. But that department store, like, that is what I'm envisioning. Which, P.S., it's not that department store, but it's kind of like that. So now the elevators in this store were a big deal, like a real big deal. This is very important. In the early 1900s, department store elevators weren't just transportation. They were an experience. You had elevator operators like, ma'am, what floor, please? I will take you to, you know, women's apparel, you know, that kind of thing. You had usually young women in uniforms who would announce each floor, you know, like, floor 12, kitchenware. So it's just so crazy. It's that charm, you know what I mean? Part of that luxury. Oh, such a dead time now. It's so sad. But Marshall Field's had multiple elevators, obviously, but there was one, and employees knew which one that was just, you know, different. Now, even before the deaths started getting documented, there were whispers about it. Staff would avoid it if they could. They'd wait for the next one. And this is where it gets interesting, because we're not talking about one or two superstitious people. We're talking about a pattern of avoidance. And this went on, like, seriously for decades. It's just wild. So now let's talk about the deaths for a minute. And I want to be clear here, because these are documented. These aren't urban legends. These are actual incidents with actual records. So the first documented death in this particular elevator happened in 1943. A woman, and I'm not going to use her name because, you know, I try to be respectful of the dead when I can, because I'm not sure if this is, like, I just got a little iffy on, I don't know if I should share this or not, since it's still, like, I don't know. Anyway, so the details are grim, okay? She had been going through some serious shit, according to newspaper reports from the time, and she chose that elevator, that location, to end things. And suicide is always tragic, always. But what happened after is what really concerns us here. Because almost immediately, the elevator started acting weird. And I don't mean normal elevator weird, like making funny noises or being slow. I mean, it would stop between floors, just stop. The doors would open to blank walls onto the space between floors where nobody should ever be. Operators would press buttons and nothing would happen. And then suddenly it would lurch up and down without any input. That's creepy. I don't like elevators. I don't know about you guys. Like, I would much rather take the stairs. You know, I'm going for the whole buns of steel thing. Like, I don't really, elevators kind of creep me out a little bit. So trigger warning for the rest of this show on this, because if you're claustrophobic and don't like elevators, this might not be the episode for you. Just saying. The elevator operators started reporting something else as well. They'd be in there alone between floors and they'd feel, and this is consistent across multiple testimonies here, like someone else was in the elevator with them. They'd feel a presence behind them, cold spots that didn't make sense, and this horrible, crushing feeling of sadness. Now, one operator, according to oral histories collected by the Chicago History Museum, and yes, it is documented there, this isn't just folklore. One operator said she could smell perfume, like floral perfume, old-fashioned, and it would come and go, and she'd smell it strongest when the elevator would malfunction. But here's where it escalates, because that wasn't the only death in this elevator. So a few years later, going into 1948, another incident. This time it was an accident. At least that's what the official report said. A maintenance worker was doing routine work on that same elevator shaft. Something went wrong. The details are sparse in the records, which is interesting in and of itself. But what we know is that he fell and had fatal injuries. Two deaths, same elevator, 5 years apart. Okay, keep that in mind. Now you'd think, okay, tragic coincidences. No such thing. These things happen in old buildings, especially with machinery from that era. Safety standards weren't what they are now, but the staff at Marshall Fields weren't buying it because the phenomenon around that elevator intensified. Multiple employees started reporting the same things. And this is where the documentation gets really interesting, you guys. Marshall Fields kept meticulous records. They had to, okay? They were a major corporation. And in their internal memos from the 1940s to the early 1950s, there are references to quote unquote mechanical issues with elevator number. Well, the specific number varies actually depending on which floor you're talking about, but employees called it the bad one. Everyone knew which one it was. But here's the thing about those mechanical issues. Engineers would come in, inspect it, you know, like top to bottom, and find nothing wrong, mechanically sound. There was no reason for it to malfunction. And yet it kept doing it. Stopping between floors, opening doors onto walls, and the presence, that feeling of someone else being there that kept happening. I want to read you something, okay, from one of those oral histories. This is from a woman who worked as an elevator operator in the early 1950s. She was in her 20s at the time, and when the Chicago History Museum interviewed her, and this interview happened in the 1990s, she was at this point in her 70s. Decades had passed, but she remembered that elevator like it was yesterday. She said, all right, so she says, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here a little bit, but we all knew about it. We'd trade shifts to avoid it. I only had to operate it a handful of times, but each time I felt sick to my stomach. Not motion sick, just wrong. Like something was watching me. And once, I swear to God, I felt someone touch my shoulder. I was alone in the elevator, completely alone, but I felt fingers on my shoulder. I got out at the next floor and refused to go back in. They had to get someone else to cover. Girl, I don't blame you, because nope, 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 nope. That's a horror movie waiting to happen and be made by Hollywood, I swear. So, and I'm just saying, this is not someone looking for attention. That's not someone trying to embellish a story for an effect, okay? This is someone decades later still unsettled by what they experienced. And she wasn't alone. Multiple operators, multiple maintenance workers, multiple managers all reported experiences with that elevator. The documentation is there, like I have said. So the Chicago History Museum has these oral histories that you can check out. The Chicago Tribune archives have references to problems with elevators at Marshall Fields, though they're careful not to call it what it was, because what it was haunted. See, I'm just going to call a spade on that. And the elevator, seriously, freaking haunted. Now, then came the third death. And this one is, we'll just say murkier, okay? Early 1950s, the exact date is hard to pin down because Marshall Fields really tried to keep this one quiet, which tells you something right there in and of itself. Now, this was, trigger alert, another suicide, another person choosing that specific elevator to end their life. Three deaths, one elevator, less than a decade. At this point, something interesting happens. Marshall Fields makes a decision. This is a company that valued efficiency, customer service, luxury. They didn't make impulsive decisions, okay? They decided to decommission that elevator. Think about that. They had a perfectly functioning, mechanically speaking, anyway, elevator in a building where elevators were essential for moving customers and merchandise, and they shut it down permanently. They sealed it off, locked the shaft, put up walls where the doors had been. And the official reason? Modernization. They were updating the elevator system. I bet you were. I bet you were. Mm-hmm. That's bullshit. So because they didn't replace it, they just removed it from service. And if you talk to people who worked there like the following decades, they'll tell you why. Because even after it was sealed, people could hear it. So maintenance workers who had access to the shaft areas, people who worked in the storage rooms adjacent to where that elevator had been, they reported hearing the elevator moving, the cables, the machinery, that distinctive sound of an elevator going up and down, but it wasn't connected anymore. It wasn't operational. And yet people kept hearing it, which is so crazy. So there are stories from the 1960s and the 1970s of employees hearing the elevator go ding, you know, when they reach that floor, that sound would like when the doors open. They'd hear it coming from behind the walls where the elevator used to be. And sometimes this is the part that just really twists me up in the biggest way, is they'd hear the ding and then they'd hear the doors open and that and then that like mechanical slide of elevator doors behind sealed walls. Oh, that's weird. That's so weird. Like, truth be told, I kind of want to go. Like, I want to take a trip down to Chicago and like walk around what's now Macy's and like just see if you could still hear it or not. Like, wouldn't that be fun? Because honestly, I mean, it's sealed off. You're going to be fine. Grab some obsidian and some salt in your pocket. You're good to go. That's just my personal take on that, to go check it out. But one account that I did come across, and I found this in a collection of Chicago folklore from like the 80s, talks about a security guard doing night rounds in the late 70s. And he's walking past where that elevator used to be, and it's now just a wall, right? It's part of a storage room, and he hears it. Like clear as day, the elevator ding, the doors opening. And he said he stood there like frozen because he could hear what sounded like someone stepping out of the elevator, footsteps on the other side of that wall. Yeah, he totally quit the next day. And like, okay. Now, look, I know that some of you could potentially be thinking like, okay, again, Star, old buildings, they make noises, pipes, ventilation, settling foundations, all of that can create sounds that seem weird or unexplainable. And I'll be the first to tell you, yeah, absolutely. I'm not dismissing that, not at all. But here's what I believe with this one. And here's why this case stands out to me, because first, we've got documentation, and that's huge to me. I do not take that lightly. We're not relying on one person's story from 50 years ago. We've got corporate records, we've got newspaper archives, we got oral histories from multiple independent witnesses, and the physical evidence of Marshall Fields making the highly unusual decision to permanently decommission a functioning elevator. Now, second, and also one of my favorites, the consistency. When you have people from different decades and people who have never come into contact with each other, never met each other, describing the same experiences and the same feelings, the sounds, the same type of presence, that's significant because that's a pattern. And third, this is important. The people reporting these experiences had absolutely nothing nothing to gain from it. These were employees, right? Working class people just trying to do their jobs. They weren't ghost hunters. They weren't looking for attention. In fact, many of them were scared to talk about it because they didn't want to seem crazy or lose their jobs, which is totally understandable. And fourth, the deaths themselves. Three documented deaths in less than a decade, all in the same location. That's not normal. And the fact that two of them were suicides, people choosing that specific location, there's something there. Whether you believe in residual energy or spiritual attachment or just the psychological weight of tragedy, something marked that space. And you know where I stand on all of this stuff. And I believe that consciousness, whatever that means, doesn't always just disappear when you die. Like, I don't know exactly how it works, obviously, but I don't know if it's ghosts in the traditional sense or energy or something we just don't even have words for yet. But it's definitely something. But I know that there are places in this world where the veil can feel thinner, where something happened that was so intense, so emotionally charged, that it left an imprint. And I think that elevator was one of those places. I really do. Think about it from a psychological perspective as well. Three people choose that location to die, and that's not random. Whether they were drawn to it for reasons they understood or didn't, and whether there was something about that place that felt, I don't know, appropriate somehow for what they were planning to do, that matters. That says something about the nature of that location. And then everyone else who went near it felt it too. They felt that wrongness, that heaviness. Now, the building still stands, by the way, if you weren't sure. It's, like I said earlier, it is Macy's now. And it's been that since 2006 when Marshall Field's was bought out by Macy's. And you can visit it. Like, I sincerely want to go do this. You can walk through the building, try to figure out where that elevator used to be. But good luck getting anyone who works there now to talk about it. I did some digging in some of the online forums looking for more, like, recent accounts from people who work in that building now. And there are only a few, and they're vague because people don't want to lose their jobs or seem unprofessional or just downright like crazy. Because let's be honest, nowadays you put anything out there and people can't wait to throw stones. So I get it. But there are mentions of weird areas in the building, cold spots that don't make sense, areas where employees do not like to go into that section alone. And one person posted anonymously on Chicago History Forum in 2019, claimed to work in the storage areas and said there's a section that's been closed off for as long as they've worked there. No clear reason why. Just don't go in there. And they said sometimes during quiet moments, you can hear sounds coming from that section. Mechanical sounds like old machinery. Now, is that the same location? I can't confirm that without serious blueprints of the building in front of me. But it's interesting, is it not? Then there's also this. The Tiffany Dome I mentioned earlier, that beautiful architectural feature, it's on the fifth floor. And multiple paranormal investigation groups have reported activity near it. They've caught orbs and photographs, EVP recordings, temperature fluctuations. Some of them claim there's activity throughout the entire building, which makes sense if you think about how many people have passed through there, like over the decades, how many lives were lived in those spaces. But there are specific areas that seem more active than others. And when you map those areas against the old floor plans, against where certain elevators used to be, patterns emerge. Here's what gets me about the story and why I actually really wanted to cover it. It's not just about the jump scares or the creepy feelings in the dark. It's about how institutions or corporations, authorities respond when faced with something they can't explain. Marshall Fields couldn't explain why the elevator kept malfunctioning when engineers found nothing wrong with it. They couldn't explain why their employees were terrified of it. They couldn't explain the patterns of death. So what did they do, right? What do you do as a corporation? Like I said earlier, they removed it. They sealed it away. They literally built walls to separate it from the rest of the building. And then they never talked about it publicly. That almost sounds like ancient 1800s or even earlier than that with castles, when they would seal off walls and castles. Like, that's kind of what it makes me think of. It reminds me of that. So it's really, really fascinating to me because it suggests that they definitely took it seriously. They didn't just tell their employees to get over it or, you know, stop being superstitious. They took action and like expensive action. Because remember, the whole store itself is 13 floors. And like, that's disruptive to the store itself as well and to the business. So why would they do that if they didn't believe on some level that something genuinely wrong going on with that space? Right? So I think about the people who have died there. I think about what their last moments must have been like, whether they felt alone, whether they felt something else in that space with them, whether whatever lingers there now, if anything does, which I think it does, is them or an echo of them or something that was attracted to what happened there. I think about the employees who had to operate that elevator day after day and feeling that wrongness and not being able to articulate why and feeling watched, like, oh, ew, I hate that feeling. Feeling that like presence and knowing that people had died there, still having to do their job because, I mean, come on, bills got to be paid, right? Girls got to work, girls got to eat, girls got to live. You know what I'm saying? And I think about people who can hear it to this day now, decades after it was sealed, hearing those doors open behind the walls, hearing the footsteps when no one should be walking. Like, what does it mean? What does it all mean, Basil? Like, seriously, when a place won't let it go. Now, look, I'm not here to tell you what to believe. That I never am. I don't ever want to do that. I'm just laying out the facts and I share the documented accounts and I tell you what I think, because honestly, I can't keep my mouth shut when it comes to what I think. But you've got to make up your own mind on this one. Like, seriously, because I would love to know. I would love to hear from you on this. And what I will say is this: if you're ever in Chicago, if you ever find yourself in that Macy's building on State Street, pay attention. Pay attention to how you feel in different parts of the store. Pay attention to whether there are areas that seem colder than others, or if the energy just feels off. And if you ask an employee who's been there for a while about the building's history, watch their face, because it never lies. Like, seriously, if there's a flicker of recognition, see if they change the subject. Because some places remember, some places hold on to what has happened there, and no amount of corporate rebranding or architectural modification is ever really going to change that. Just saying. Now, the death elevator might be sealed behind walls now, And it might be decommissioned, forgotten by most people who shop there today, but it's still there and it's still part of the building's bones. And based on the accounts that still trickle out and still making itself known. So, all right, you guys, that's it for today. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. I would love it if you took a moment to rate and review. Make sure you click the subscribe and follow button. Tell me what you think on social media over at creepy_shit_podcast on Instagram. And if you've worked at the Marshall Fields building that I'm talking about, I'm listening. Because if you got a story to share, I am all ears. You can reach out to me. And you can even email me if you want at creepyshitpodcastofficial@gmail.com. All right, you guys, until next week, stay curious, stay skeptical, but remember, most of all, sometimes the creepiest shit is also the truest. Okay, bye.